Okay, hey everybody. Thank you, Cheryl. As Cheryl said, this is the program Wake Up and Roar, where I read from the book of the same name, subtitled Sat Song with Papaji by Eli Jackson Bear. And you guys may know that Eli Jackson Bear is the husband of Gangaji. I did feel like I would like to start today with a song. So it's interesting that you knew that, Cheryl. And I am going to play a song from YouTube, hopefully without complication. So here goes.
Sunday we would go to church, pay attention to the priest, and he would read the holy word, and consecrate the holy bread, and everyone would kneel and bow. Today the only difference is, everything is holy now, everything. Changed since then. Everything is holy now. It used to be a world half there, heaven's second rate hand me down, but I walk it with a reverent air, everything is whole now.
I have a couple things to say about that song. One is that the Troubadours of Divine Bliss played that song at my father's celebration of life, whenever that was, a couple weeks ago, January the 11th. And I was thinking I should see if I can find their version somewhere. Maybe on Facebook or something, but they do that beautifully. They also incorporate the song Amazing Grace in their version. It's really beautiful. The other thing I want to say about that song is, it was a nice choice and really well done. The other thing I want to say is that it's not surprising that that song came to mind, given today's thought of awakening. Hi, Kitty. And so I'll just take a second and share that. The thought of awakening for today is, accept all things given as a gift from our Holy Spirit for the purpose of peace and awakening to love. And I did do some writing with that this morning, and the snippet of writing that I have also put here on my 3x5 card is that, I'll put it in shorthand. So I'll say that when we see all things as gifts, all circumstances and encounters are met with excited expectancy. Roar, Sat Song with Papa G. Since the last time I spoke to you guys, I have adopted a kitten, really, and she won something right this moment. I have no idea what that might be, but I will try not to let her bother me. All right. Okay, cool. I'll look for the Troubadours. Version of that song. Cheryl says that she found them on YouTube. I'll play that next time. Okay. So, where we left off last time was I was reading the foreword from the book. I had read you the foreword from Prince E.A. I've read you the foreword from Gangaji, and I was following up with, I was finishing up with the foreword from Eli Jackson Bear. And so I'll just pick up where I left off. He says that Papa G told me he had plans for me beyond my wildest dreams. And at the end of February, he said I was tested and ready. I interrupted him and told him my wife was the Sat Guru, and I would return with her to see him. I told him my wife was a goddess. And though she started as my student, for the past several years she had been my teacher. As she was a goddess, not a yogi, I wanted to find suitable accommodations for her coming to meet him. Before my leaving India, he wanted to show me the Ganga, where we would find housing for my wife, and he would wait for our return. When I returned with my wife, he named her Gangaji. He said she had the purity, nobility, and sattvic nature to take this transmission to the world. He sent her out to go door to door, and in this way, Satsang entered the West. That's just the last two paragraphs of that foreword from Eli Jackson Bear. Said he wrote that in Maui, Hawaii, December of 1991. All right, so that that takes us to the book proper. And Eli notes here that this book is based on tape-recorded sat song. Book one. The book is based on tape-recorded sat songs that occurred in Lucknow and Hardwar, India, between January 1990 and April 1991. The sat songs, which were open to everyone, took place in Sri H.W.L. Punja's home. The voices and questions of the various participants are presented here as one voice. Okay. Yay, we're ready for chapter one, The Cry of Freedom. Before I read some more, I just want to say that it's interesting to me at least, when I sit down with this book to share with you guys, I feel some nervousness, and perhaps based on thought of awakening for today, I might be better to interpret that as excited expectancy. What I think the nervousness is that that I'm not sure how well I comprehend this material. That as Regina keeps telling us, it's not about my intellectual comprehension. That's not why I'm here, quote unquote, teaching. I'm here to allow comprehension, to allow the truth of what's being said here to dawn on me. So that's what I'm about here, gang. So here we go. The Cry of Freedom. There is a river of thought waves. Everyone is being washed downstream. Everyone is clinging to these thoughts and being washed away. And what immediately comes to mind with that, and I've told you guys about this experience before, is that experience that I had at the Enlightenment Intensive we went to in September, where I experienced the truth of my being as a flow, and I experienced ego thoughts, ego identifications. And I even saw it as a river at one point, but I experienced ego thoughts and identifications as like an attempt to cling to the banks of this river of the truth of what I was. And thereby to block the flow. So it's interesting that he has a somewhat similar description here in the opening paragraph. Of course, this is Papaji speaking here. So again, I'm going to just read that little paragraph again and then move on. There is a river of thought waves. Everyone is being washed downstream. Everyone is clinging to these thoughts and being washed away. Just give rise to the single thought, I want to be free. This thought will rarely come out of the entire population. The entire population of the planet is moving downstream. Yeah, and of course, again, he seems to be talking more about the thoughts as washing us away, right? Washing us from our hold on the truth of who we are, if you will. So it's actually kind of a reverse metaphor from what I was saying. But he does say, the entire population of the planet is moving downstream. They are not destined to give rise to the thought, I want to be enlightened in this very span of time. They are not destined to give rise to the thought, I want to be enlightened in this very span of time. So I call this thought of freedom going against the stream and toward the source. It does not require any effort to give rise to this thought. The thought, I want to be free, is itself free. This thought will take you to freedom. It is the most rare thought. Out of the entire population of 6 billion, only a handful give rise to this thought. Yeah, what came to me reading that paragraph was, you know, he's saying here the same thing that some of us were kind of upset when we heard Elie Ruzdahl say, We heard Michael Langford say the same thing, that, you know, there's just a very small percentage that will even can even give rise to this thought at this point. This thought, I want to be free. You know, it's interesting though, because I think that we all want to be free. I think, and I was just reading Floyd Henderson say something similar. He said, a number of people, I'm not sure I could find it, if I looked in my in my Floyd Henderson book. Let me just take a second and see if I can see that. Sorry for the delay. What he was saying was that, oh, here it is. He says, during the worst days of your relative existence, which became so miserable that you were forced into the submission of finally questioning everything, you are at least conscious enough of that inner truth to say, I don't even know who I am. What makes your case different from that of persons who yet walk about in their sleep is that you asked the follow-up question, if this is not who I am, then who am I? The asking of that question allowed you to begin a journey that enabled you to reach this level of understanding. Yeah, so I mean, so that question, if this is not who I am, then who am I? Is what spurs us on, right, on the spiritual journey, if you will. And it's the same question that Papaji is identifying here, the I want to be free, that he says is so rare in the general population. I think everybody in the population, again, wants to be free. But I think that, for most of us, for most of the population, you know, we just don't know how to go about attaining that. And I think the freedom, and I think the way to do that is the question then asked by Floyd Henderson, then what am I, right? Okay, so, question. Master, I have been with you for 4 days now, and I am still not enlightened. Papaji laughing. Yes, I am surprised, a smart boy like you. Question. What should I do? Papaji, let me tell you what my teacher told me. Just be quiet. This quiet does not involve talking or not talking. It does not involve any doing whatsoever. Just let the mind fall into silence. This is enough. And for those of you who were here the other night when we did our satsang with Suze Wicks, she was saying the same thing, right? She was saying, find that space. And I'm like, should I go in my room, close the door, turn the computer off? She's like, no, not that space. We're not talking about finding a physical space. I'm not talking about doing anything necessarily different. What I'm talking about is finding that silent space within you. And, you know, as we know, that may require, and in fact probably does require, us to find space in our physical environment and space in our timeline, right? Make space to then go within and find this silence. I think that what we'll see as we go through this book, and I think in fact we talked about it, we looked at it in these forewords, Eli, or Gangaji One, we're talking about how, you know, this silence is everywhere. this silence can be found in the marketplace, right, in the streets. But the admonition, it's a bad word, but is the recommendation, the prescription is to find that silence within yourself. Again, as I'm going to read you that paragraph again. Papaji says, "Let me tell you what my teacher told me. Just be quiet. This quiet does not involve talking or not talking. It does not involve any doing whatsoever. Just let the mind fall into silence. This is enough." Questioner: "Now wait, I can't believe what you just said to him. I've been trained to think that it takes years and years of practice and lifetimes of training and hard work to reach liberation. Now you say it's simply a switch on the wall, a change of perception. Is that correct?" Papaji: "You need not switch on or off. For the sun to shine, do you switch it on?" Questioner: "No." Papaji: "Just like this, the light is always there. No switches at all. The sun has no switches. You turn your face away and you call it night. Sun has no night and no day. You are that sun. This is your own light and you are that. You don't need any switches. The switches are limitations. You have fixed these limitations yourself. Nature has not fixed any switches. I want this. I want that. I dislike this. I like that. If you remove the switch of like and dislike, how will you feel? Instantly, you will be free. Likes and dislikes keep you in bondage and suffering. There are no walls for the switches either. Walls are imaginary only, like walls between countries. You have constructed this wall between you and something else. You have to break this which does not exist. The frontier you have created is the suffering. You have to demolish it by yourself. Nobody will help you." Give me a minute while I close the door. Yeah, and then this brings me back to this, I don't know what to call it, idea, concept, truth that I've been contemplating. Regina spoke, it's funny, I heard my sister Connie was telling me what Regina spoke about on Sunday, and I'm like, oh, well, yeah, that's what you got from the talk in here. This is the part that I focused in on. So this is, yeah, this is the way it's this lesson seems to be working for me. But and I'm also again reading some material from Floyd Henderson that is making this same point. So let me get to the point. And the point is that these that this false self that we talk about is not it's not a singular, consistent, certainly not a solid self, but rather it's made up of these individual roles that we play. You may have heard Connie and I talk about it last night. She was talking about being on the phone with during growing with NTI, she was talking about being on phone with somebody from some charity, and that, you know, she was short with her, and you know, and no, she wasn't going to give her credit card on the phone, and no, she wasn't going to call another number. If this woman, you know, wanted her to give money, then she should just send her an invoice, right? But the point is, let me see if I can get to it. The point is that she talked about how she had adopted this role of savvy business person, or, you know, smart person, right? And that she related to this woman from this role. On Sunday, Regina talked about relationships and how we form expectations within a relationship, and then when those expectations don't get met, you know, therein lies the sorrow, right? Then we're unhappy, then we're miserable, then we're sad, then we're angry, right? And that beyond looking at the fact that we form, or beyond letting go of these expectations, it was suggested we might want to look at why we form the expectation. What am I using that other person in the relationship for? What image am I nurturing? What image, what false self have I built that that I'm expecting this other person to uphold? And so, so what I am seeing is that I have all of these false selves. You know, it's again, for a long time we've talked about, oh, you know, everything we do when we're not in our right minds, which is a lot of the time, right? But everything that we do is designed to build and maintain a false self. But there seems to be some real wisdom for me in seeing that, no, all the time we're building and maintaining thousands upon thousands of false selves. So that if I'm on that phone call that Connie's on, right, I am being the savvy business person. Preoccupied with thought about selling my house, I am the image that I am building is house owner. You know, it may be very closely related to person who's in lack, right? But it's this image that's coming forward. You know, when I'm with my son, I'm mom, and you know, when I'm with my friends, I'm a good friend or I'm a bad friend. And if you say something that challenges my notion of myself as a good friend, then I'm upset. Then I have created the opportunity for sorrow, anger, misery. If I'm at work, right, I'm a good employee, if something happens to challenge my notion of myself as an employee, as a good employee, then I am upset or angry or whatever. So it just, for me, what I've been looking, even when I'm sitting in meditation and the thoughts come up, I am looking at, you know, well, who has that thought? The homeowner, the mom, the employee, right? And I can see how I am building these individual personas. And as I see, oh, that supports that persona, it feels like that persona gets lighter. It feels like that's chipping away at that persona, because I can see very clearly what that thought is designed to do. And so I'm able to give it up, as opposed to that, to a general, oh, well, you know, I really should be nicer to people. Well, not meditation, right? Or, oh, I wish these thoughts would go away, right? It just seems easier to take little bites of these thousands of different personas that I create. let me get a drink here. So let's go back to Papaji and see what Papaji has to say. Actually, he does. He says the same thing. I want this, I want that, I dislike this, I like that. If you remove this switch of like and dislike, how will you feel? Instantly you will be free, right? So if I can identify that as upholding that persona, then I can let that go, and I can be free of that persona, at least in that instant. Yeah, and you know, as I'm exploring this from the beginning, I see that those same components come back around. Those same false selves come back around, but they're more easily identified the next time. And you know, we looked at, when we were looking at it in NTI last night, we looked about it in terms of becoming the empty shell, and emptying the shell of all these different personas. And once I become the empty shell, then I can hear inner guidance and intuition. So what I'm able to do is make room for that. And I feel like Papaji is saying the same thing when he talks of when he then goes from, you know, the individual likes and dislikes to the walls between countries. You know, he says you have constructed this wall between you and something else, and this is how, you know, we build separation. This is how I build separation between me and other people. This is how I build separate experiences. Separation between the experience I'm having at work and the experience that I'm having in my living room and the experience that I'm having when I'm in a meeting, and right? These are the walls that we build with these individual thoughts, liking and dislike. I like and dislike them because they either support the image that I am building for that circumstance, or they don't. Okay, he says the frontier you have created is the suffering. You have to demolish it by yourself. Nobody will help you. And the questioner says, "What do you mean nobody will help you, Papaji?" The self has to help the self. Nobody else can help. Who else will drop this wall? You have to help yourself. Find out, is it possible to be out of the self ever? First say, "I want help." Then discover who needs help. Self is not suffering. Self is not in bondage. Self is ever free. I think it's wonderful. You know, again, it's in this Floyd Henderson book, he was talking about how a fellow comes to him and goes, "Oh, you know, my wife left me, and I'm so miserable, and I don't know what to do." And he's like, "Who's miserable? You know, it's the husband that's miserable. You're miserable because when she left, she destroyed the husband character. Right? You're upset because you're losing that sense of self." And this is the same, seems to me, that Papaji's saying here. First say, "I want help," then discover who needs help. Because the truth of who you are isn't suffering. It's got to be this particular image of yourself that you've built. So, my friend didn't call me when she said she would. And that makes me sad or angry or feel disrespected. Who feels sad or angry or disrespected? My friend persona, right? So the questioner says, "So you are saying it is the mind clinging to the wall that is suffering?" Papaji says, "Yes." Who has created separation? Mind has created separation, and no mind will remove this separation. The separation doesn't exist. Even to say, "I am separate," is a joke. It is only when there is a need for understanding that there is something to be understood. Once, some of Krishnamurti's students came here to see me. They said there is only one difference between our teachings. They said Krishnamurti removes concepts from the vessel, and Punjaji breaks the vessel altogether. And laughs. Yeah, and as we'll see, and as I was reading on the one of our web pages today, Papaji is perhaps famous for saying that the truth of who you are is accessible right now. You know that it doesn't take, as you know, this fellow said a moment ago, I thought it took of practice. And Papaji is famous for saying, no, it's all accessible right now. My experience thus far is that it does take some practice. Certainly, when I find that still space, when I've run all the false personalities out of the vessel, at least momentarily, then I find the truth of my being. Then I'm able to rest in the truth of my being. But for me, as yet, that is not a consistent experience. For me, that seems temporary from the vantage point where I sit, because it seems that the false selves come rushing in. I know that that is not what Papaji is teaching here. Papaji is teaching. I know that. I think I know that because I've read it, right? What I think Papaji is teaching here, again, is that the truth of who we are is immediately accessible, and given that it is all that we are, and that it is consistent, not temporary, never ending, without beginning and without end, that the truth of the matter is, I haven't dropped the mic. I'm wondering where I was going with the end of that sentence. Certainly, as I look at it, I can see the truth of the matter is that if it's always immediately accessible, and if it, we, the truth of ourselves, awareness, if it's immediately accessible and if it's always consistent, then we should always have immediate access to it. And it is always our choice whether to abide there or whether to, run back out and run around with all these false personalities. As I say that, I'm reminded of Inner Ramana that talks about, whether you stay in the meadow or you keep running back out to the circus. Yeah, and Regina notes, we don't have to get it or build it, we just have to lose interest in the obstacles. Yeah, absolutely. So Papaji says, so allow yourself some time, a couple of moments, and in those moments there should be no trespassing. Make available a few seconds, and during this span, nobody should trespass. I think you could well afford to be available for a few moments. You have spent all of your life for others, and not even a minute for yourself, capital S, self. You have spent all your life for others, and not even a minute for yourself. Everyone possesses you. When you are born, your parents say, "You are my son." Go to school next, and you're my student. Then marry, and you're my husband. Have children, and you're my father. Remove these possessions. Let no one possess you. Reject everything and see what happens. You have to devote some time for yourself, either now or in some other lifetime. You have to reach your home. There is no escape. You have to return home, either now or tomorrow. You must decide if you want to play more. It doesn't matter. In the end, it doesn't matter. You think it's taking time. It is no time that you are spending, because you are already free. It is only your illusion that you are not. You have to allow time once and for all if you want to be happy. You have to allow time once and for all if you want to be happy. The moment you declare, "I am free," standing on the mountaintop of your toes, arms up, eureka, there is the happy moment. Very happy moment. Yeah, that's really sweet. It just makes me smile the way he says it there, right? Yeah, and I think I made those comments before I read that, so I think he talked about those multiple false personas that we buy into, that we create. And I think he talked about the consistent, always immediately accessible nature of the true self, and the fact that, you know, it's our choice. It's our choice, and it's time to declare, "I am free, eureka." Well, Regina says he copied my teaching, but I got to tell you, I've read this before. I was surprised, though, pleasantly surprised to see him talk about that. Okay. We are on page 4 of Wake Up and Roar. Papaji asks, "What prevents you from freedom? What is the impediment?" The questioner: "That I often have lots of thoughts, and it is very difficult to get rid of them." Papaji: "What kind of thoughts do you have? Do you give rise to the thought of freedom?" "Yes." "Yes," the questioner says. And actually, you know, I've been saying questioner and Papaji, and I don't know if that's helpful. If those words are not written in this book, I don't know if it's more helpful to try and insert that or not. At any rate, we'll just see how that unfolds. Papaji says, "What kind of thoughts do you have? Do you give rise to the thought of freedom?" "Yes." "Hold on to this thought of freedom. Do you see any other thoughts simultaneously rising up?" "No." "Mind can hold on to only one thought at a time." Questioner: "I understand." Papaji: "Tell which other thoughts replace this thought of freedom." I'm going to back up. Yeah, I got wrapped up in my narration, but I'm going to back up. He says to the questioner, he says, "Hold on to this thought of freedom. Do you see any other thoughts simultaneously rising up?" And the questioner says, "No." And then Papaji says, "Mind can hold on to only one thought at a time." Which is really helpful in and of itself. You know, we've talked about for a long time now. You know, Regina has instructed us in using a true thought to replace an untrue thought. You know, and it's that idea of a thorn used to remove a thorn, right? It's a bridge thought. So this is a kind of an advancement of that same teaching, because he asked him first, he said, "Do you give rise to the thought of freedom?" The student answers yes. He says, "Are there any other thoughts simultaneously rising up?" The student says no. And he makes, and Papaji makes the point, "Mind can hold on to only one thought at a time." And then Papaji says, "Tell which other thoughts replace this thought of freedom. Voluntarily bring another thought to replace this. Another thought that you like best. Do it, do it." And the student says, "I don't want to reject this thought." Papaji says, "Very good, very nice. When you like this thought, where will this thought take you? Where will other thoughts be? Where is freedom? How many kilometers away from you?" But yeah, again, when you like this thought, where will this thought take you? And, you know, that's akin to the practice of, you know, holding your true desire as a beacon in front of you. When you like this thought of freedom, when you like this thought, where will this thought take you? Where will other thoughts be? Where is freedom? How many kilometers away from you? And the student says, I don't think it is far away from me. Papaji says, if it is not far from you, then how much time is needed for you to arrive here? How much time to be as you are? It is here and now. How much time to be here and now? The student, as little as possible. Papaji, let us agree, as little as possible. Should we call it this moment, this instant, the least possible time? This instant is the time. Now look at this moment, the least time. Look into this instant. If it is not far away, jump into it right now. Student, how? Papaji, now! Much laughter. Now, what is the thought now? The student, none, only this. Now. Excuse me. None, only this now. Papaji, no thoughts troubling you now? The student, only that I am looking for thoughts. Papaji, yes, yes, keep on looking for thoughts. Do you understand what you are saying? The student, yes. Papaji, if you don't look for a thought, the thoughts will look for you. If you don't look, all the thoughts attack you. Try. If you look for a thought, do you catch it? The student, they have disappeared. Papaji, then when the thoughts have disappeared, who are you? Silence. This is the best answer you can give me. Stay as such. If you step out of the silence, there is trouble. You don't need anything. Eternity is here. Happiness is here. No death can enter this silence. No trouble can enter here. Step out, and there is samsara, the endless cycle of birth and death. No thought. No concept can enter here. All desires are met here in emptiness. You walk out chasing after desires, and they are never fulfilled. Interesting. This seems like an... an instruction as to how to be in the silence. He says, if you don't look for a thought, the thoughts will look for you. If you don't look, all the thoughts will attack you. It seems like that's that when we talk in true meditation, about that alert awareness. Maybe that excited expectancy I opened with. But he makes that same point about, you know, stepping out of the meadow and back into the circuit. The circus. If you don't look for a thought, the thoughts will look for you. If you don't look, all the thoughts will attack you. Try, if you look for a thought, do you catch it? They have disappeared. Then when the thoughts have disappeared, who are you? Yeah, so it, you know, I don't know. again, it seems like he's teaching that alert awareness. You know, if we just allow mind wandering, you know, we stay caught up in the same personas that we are. It seems like when I close my eyes and meditate and look for thoughts, I find plenty of them. I've heard people describe looking for thoughts like a cat watching a mouse hole, right? And just wait to see what the next thought will be. And I don't know if that's what Papaji's describing here. But I intend to try it. Yeah, in fact, just trying it for a second, I'm like, thought, where's the thought, where's the thought? But again, the next time I sit down for meditation, I will try it again as well. Okay. Move on to the next page. He says, the questioner says, all my life, yeah, Regina says, thoughts are like cockroaches. They scatter when the light is on. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. The questioner, the student says, all my life, even as a little boy, the desire for freedom has been stronger than all other desires. It doesn't really seem to be a desire. It's more like a longing. This desire seems to pull me back, while the other desires seem to pull me out. This desire for freedom mysteriously seems to stay, where the other desires come and go and change with my thoughts. The desire for freedom is always there, burning. It seems to be deeper than the mind. Is this true? Papaji says, this is the most intense desire. All other desires are on the surface. They rise and fall, you see. The desire for freedom is intense, and you must respond to it. When you respond, this desire will bring you back home. It will continue to trouble you if it is not fulfilled in this lifespan. This desire must be fulfilled, whether you like it or not. That is why you come here. What a farce! This desire follows you wherever you go, in whatever incarnation you take. It will not leave you. How did it push you here? You left your job and your business. Why did you have to come here? Just consider it. You must return home. How long can you stay at the market? Yeah, and again, it's this reference to what we've discussed as true desire. You know, these other desires come and go with whatever particular persona we happen to be inhabiting at the time. You know, I have a desire to be seen this way. I have a desire to be seen that way. I have a desire to have something so that I can, right, achieve some kind of happiness in this imagined self. You know, I imagine what a happy self looks like, and therefore I desire the things that I think will give me that picture of happiness. But that is not our true desire. And as we've seen over and over and over again, it is our true desire that we know ourselves, that we return to ourselves, that we return to our home. And of course, it's not a journey from here to here. but it's our true desire that leads us to the truth of who we are. You must return home. How long can you stay at the market? Yeah, it is a great analogy. The questioner says, it seems the only response to the desire is to look within, to where the mind originates, to go to the place where thoughts arise and stay with it. That is the response, isn't it? Papaji, yes, you will unceasingly scan the mind, unceasingly, and you will know who you are. So let me just look at that again. He says, it seems the only response to the desire is to look within to where the mind originates. And, you know, he's talking about the true desire. And, you know, again, these terms are used a little bit differently here. You know, often to many of us, mind seems like, to a Course student, Course in Miracles student, mind seems like a dirty word, you know, but rather this is a reference to, I believe this is a reference to the one mind, to the truth of who we are. It seems the only response to the desire is to look within to where the mind originates, to go to the place where thoughts arise and stay with it. That is the response, isn't it? Yes, you will unceasingly scan the mind, unceasingly, and you will know who you are. You know, I look at this and I think it could be read either way, right? But I don't. It could be said, you know, you will scan your mind for the thoughts that aren't the truth of who you are. So I don't know if any of you feel like you have any insight on that. I'm not sure that I do. I think that what's important here is what's been said, is to follow that true desire, and it will lead you home. Okay, that's where I'm going to leave it. I might look at that quote some more and pick up with that next week. I'm out of time at this point. I love you guys. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for being here with me. Okay, letting go of the mic.